C-168. Number 8B.
So, when one is digging into the whole subject, one suddenly then begins to see that there are so many different laws that are fundamental to being. And therefore the question is always how to approach that whole question of culturing oneself in laws. Well, just go along the way that the idea of law has developed in a natural way through the last 50 years. The very first law that we got familiar with was order. The order, say, of the word order. Alone that, to culture that law, that is order, is a terrific thing. And we see that through the textbook, we mostly find, really in the textbook, that the chapters are laid out in an order, the word order. So, in order to culture ourselves in the laws, we have to think out these orders. We have to think out what does that order of the seventh subject in a chapter really mean? Why is, and that's the question, how order becomes law to our mentality, when we ask, why is the first subject really the first subject? Why couldn't it be the last subject? Why is the second subject not the first, or why is it not the fifth? Just always ask, why is a subject at that place where it is? If we ask that question and see an answer to it, then very naturally our mentality, our consciousness, gets in a, so to say, in an automatic flow of the order of the world, so that it becomes a law. Order is a law, because you cannot change the order. You cannot change in the order of the days of creation the order of the days. You cannot start with the sixth day, and then with the third day, and then with the seventh day, and then with the first day. It does not make sense. Though you state all the seven, but not in a order, then it is not a law. Then it's just an arrangement which makes no sense. So the moment we begin to train ourselves in the order of a subject, little by little it sinks in that it becomes to us a law. What does it mean? It means that it sinks in into our consciousness until it becomes nearly the subconscious or the unconscious attitude, which we have no more to think about it, but, as I say, where we react that way in a natural way. That is something that is perhaps done not enough. I always try to pinpoint this and say, look here, here is again an order. We have even seen how important it is, for instance, in a chapter to see that the subtones of the main tones are following always the same order, which would show what? That those orders of the subtones are a law. See, if, say, in the chapter on prayer, the seventh, the first main tone had subtones in a word order, that would be different than the order of the second main tone, and would also state seven, but in a different way, or the third, seventh subtones, in another way. Then we would say there is no law in it. But if they are always stated in the same order, all through the seven, so that all the seven subtones of the seven main tones are always following the same order, we can say this is the law, there is a law in the subtones in it. And we have done that, you remember. We have done that in the summer school when we did take prayer and atonement and Eucharist, that we are considering it. For instance, you remember that the seven prayers, as their subtones, had always the same order. They always, every one of them, started out first with the tone that we have to be open to that subject, opening thought. And the second was always that we have to turn away from the wrong and to turn to the right. Then as a third subtone always came, that we need meekness in order that we really can turn away from the wrong and turn to the right. In the fourth was always that sense that that would correct a false attitude. Principle would correct that false attitude. That in the fifth subtone, you always had the very same thing, that you have to go to the source of everything, to the true source of everything, and not start out from the phenomena. In the sixth, it would always have shown that doing what is divinely right, that that is really that which destroys then the wrong attitude, the error. And finally, it would always show in the seventh subtone that a sense of motherhood would be necessary to bring about the solution. Therefore, you had always the same rhythm in it, and then you could say, golly, that's the order, that order is a law. So if it is a law, then you see that you can even reduce the subtones to a law. And so the whole chapter on prayer becomes still simpler. You only have to know the order of the main tone, the order of the subtone as law, and you have it. And you can calculate again what you want to calculate, the 7x7. You are no more dependent then on the text. You begin to calculate yourself in laws. That's one thing. But another thing I wanted to bring out, say, with thinking about orders until they become law, is this, that the more we are culturing that flow of an order, it's a flow of an order, which is divinely logical. The more we culture that, something sinks in into our consciousness that afterwards cannot go away anymore from that law. You have known, little by little, it becomes so natural that you don't react anymore in a different way. Just that way, if we have done our numeration table in school over and over and over, it comes to the point where we just can't react anymore that 5 times 5 is 25 or things like that. It sits into your consciousness. It becomes our being. So we have not only concept building and tonality building, but we also have then consciousness building, so that it becomes our new form of consciousness, our new model of consciousness. And then finally, you begin to realize that whatever comes to you, you automatically react in a law that follows a definite order. You don't start anymore at the end of an order. You start automatically, without thinking about it, you start with mind, then with spirit, and then with soul, principle, life, truth, and love, in that specific case. So, you can see, again and again, we would find laws that would, say, indicate order. You remember what we had in Atonement and Eucharist, when we were considering the 7 5 main subjects, which were so big. And then all were shown through 7 subtones. And always the subtones followed the same order, the same tonality, the same meaning, so to say. And if one gets that order properly, one can't help feeling that in one's life one just reacts that way. What were those wonderful orders in Atonement and Eucharist in the subtones? It was always that which said, the moment the Christ touches you and the Christ comes to the human, what happens? The very first thing is you begin to act according to that inspiration. That was the first subtone of mind. The subtone of spirit said at once, and if you act according to your inspiration, you certainly have to turn away from the wrong and turn completely to what is right. If you turn completely to what is right, you can be absolutely sure that that leads you away from the wrong, from the sense to soul, and something within you becomes very definite that is of the divine nature, and that automatically led always to the subtone of principle, which said that then the divine begins to demonstrate itself in you. You don't have any more to demonstrate within you. It demonstrates within you, and that demonstrates what within you. You rest in that principle that says, I am life, which says that it brings newness of life to you. You can't help that it brings newness to life to you. You can't help that everything is leading then towards that atonement with the idea of man, that you become man in God's image and likeness. You can't help it. And so you find out really that this man is one with God, the unity of God. You just can't help it anymore. You go in a very natural, automatic way along that order, because it's a law. But this naturally doesn't happen if we just here and there take the textbook and the structure book and the epitome book and look a little bit into it and then close it again and go away. One naturally has to love those laws. One has to ponder that laws. Else they never sink in. I was always impressed by these many different laws of the subtones in the textbook. I remember way back already, there was that wonderful applicable practical law of the subtones, for instance, in the chapter on signs of being, which we have taken together too some years ago. And signs of being naturally has a very different field of application. The science of being, the first part, as you know, has a very practical field of application, which says, how is it actually possible, and how can we make it possible that ideas take care of illusions, that ideas destroy illusions? How is that possible? Is it enough to say ideas destroy illusions? That's that point, final, full stop, paragraph. No more, not much more. No, we can't do that. We must see the mechanics in it, the procedure in it. And once you have seen that, that stays with you through the whole life, because it is a very practical question. Over and over, the practical question is that, how can I get rid of a belief? How can I get rid of an illusion? And I know I can get rid of an illusion only through ideas. But how? And so the subtones there, where every time in all those main tones, were saying always the very same thing. It first said, look here, you first have to see that ideas are not illusions, that ideas are not beliefs. You have to see the nature of idea and not the nature of belief. If you see what is belief, what is idea, then Spirit says, then choose ye. Choose on which side you want to be. Are you wanting to be on the side of idea or on the side of illusion? You can choose which way you are going. If you go the right way, then soul says, if you go the right way, then you have chosen that which is bigger than the wrong way. Soul says what is superior to something, what control, that the greater controls the lesser. And you get the sense that if I choose the right way in spirit, then I begin to have something which is superior to the belief and to illusion. And that always leads then to the fourth, which says, and you know, if you have chosen the right side, the real, which is superior to the unreal, then that alone has a principle behind itself. The other has not the principle behind itself. And you begin to feel that enormous authority that you are backed up by principle. And that principle says, and if you take that standpoint, that is that which reveals the eternal facts to you. And that is that which destroys the false beliefs. And it, therefore, it's that that was truth. Therefore, it's that now we come to love. Therefore, it's that which makes you one with God, and you don't have any more to choose between what you have started with, between ideas and illusion. You are then one with God. So if that law of the subtones just sits in one's own bones and flesh and blood, you know, just as you know that after the one comes the two, and after the two comes the three, and then the four, if that sits in one's consciousness and cultures it, one cultures within oneself the divine order as a divine law. Once that is rooted in consciousness, you can't get rid of it anymore. It acts automatically. We act automatically. We say at once, is that an idea? Is that an illusion? Well, I take the side of the idea and not that of the illusion. I take that side of the idea because that's superior to the illusion. Why should I take the side of the idea? Because that has alone behind it the divine principle. Therefore, the divine authority. Therefore, that is alone that which will last forever life. And that alone is that which destroys error because it's the truth. And that is alone that is near God and makes you one with God, and you don't have any more to choose between good and evil. Can you see? I beg you, you know, not just to read the books. You have to ponder them until you see order, until you see laws. And only a consciousness that is filled with laws and orders and rule and system and method, only such a consciousness brings forth the true form of truth. And that alone is that which really unites us with the one infinite being. So it's a culturing of consciousness, as you see, not by reading and repeating statements and memorizing statements. I sometimes just can go up the wall when all these students come along and say, my teacher had said once this and this. My practitioner has made this and this statement. I say, golly, yes, thousands of practitioners, millions of people make true statements. What's the good of it? It's no more good. That's no more good. We are living in an age of science. And therefore, only an age of science can solve the present situation. But we are not living in an age of science if our consciousness is not scientifically structured. Then we live in an age of science, which is science, and we are way back in the dark ages. What's the use of that? So, little by little, you see, these laws came to be seen one after the other. No matter what we touched at that point, Dorley touched order and he could see that order is law. After Dorley we began to see the laws of the Christ, the laws of Christianity, the laws of the textbook. We began to see the laws of the subtones. We began to see the laws of the matrix. We began to see the laws of the chart, namely all the laws of divine science, the laws of absolute Christian science, the laws of Christian science. You have them in my level book. Afterwards, we began to see the cybernetic law of the self-regulating system of being, with the laws of the positive feedback, the laws of the negative feedback. We began to see, finally, I would say, the laws of oneness. And so I want to speak a little bit about that further step that we did, all coming out of that root when we began to see the structure of being on structuralism, namely the four levels. I come now to the subject of the oneness of being. What is that subject? We know that we started out with Dorley, with Bicknell Young, that they had this great revelation that being is one, finally they could read what was printed black on white in the textbook, the principle and idea is one, and not leaving at that, or it would still give a sense that there are two, principle on one side and idea on the one side. So Mrs. Eddy put in a wrong grammar and said principle and idea is one and not are one. It is an isness and not a plurality. And this isness, she says, is God. So this is a very high statement that shows that there is only one being, and she also afterwards talks about that one being. But we have seen then that Dolly saw that we must fill that one being with structures, with categories that would formulate a structure. As time went on, one was seeing that the textbook in its structure was actually only showing the interrelationship of the level of absolute Christian Science with the level of Christian Science. That matrix on the textbook was not taking into account that there is also a higher level than Christian Science, namely divine science and science itself. So, naturally, the thought came up, well, what then is divine science? Where can I find divine science? Is the textbook a textbook of divine science? And that was now settled. No, because the text, when it was analyzed consecutively, showed very clearly that it was absolute Christian Science related to Christian Science. And yet one would know that somehow here and there Mrs. Eddy would draw the authority of presenting absolute Christian and Christian Science from a higher authority, namely from divine science. And very often she would talk about divine science. So the question came up in my mind now, where do I find now really the laws of divine science? And that was not easy to answer at first, because the consecutive text, as I said, is only showing those two levels of absolute Christian Science and Christian Science. Therefore, I could reason from there that actually the textbook would not give a consecutive presentation of divine science. Therefore, only here and there would have to be a divine science level from which Mrs. Eddy would translate the divine science to absolute Christian Science. So what was left over was therefore to go through the textbook from beginning to end and see where Mrs. Eddy was speaking on the level of divine science, and not of absolute Christian Science and Christian Science. So I went through every chapter, picking out really those themes where she would treat with the level of divine science. And I would make a note there so that from here and there I would see that she was representing divine science. And then when I did that and was comparing what she said in every chapter on divine science, I could easily see that in every chapter she was dealing with divine science in a different way than in another chapter. And that gave me that wonderful sense that the oneness of being is a multitudinous oneness of being. That oneness of being is just a general term, but that oneness of being has 16 fundamental aspects of oneness. And so I brought out in my oneness book really how every chapter would bring out the idea of oneness in a different way, and could show that every chapter, interestingly enough, had another aspect of oneness than all the other chapters. Which then also brought me to the question, is there a matrix about it? Can I put out a matrix on the oneness of being? Are there laws in the oneness of being? An Acharya could easily show that there are laws because each chapter was bringing in specific characteristics of oneness and therefore would also nullify specific aspects of dualism, so that we can't just say, well, dualism is the counterfeit of the monism, but that there are, so to say, many aspects of dualism, so I could write out really all those 16 laws of oneness which would deal with dualism. So you can see that that aspect of divine science does not run really consecutively through the text, but only here and there would stand out like an iceberg, so to say, out of the water, just the top of it, and say, here I am, here is your authority from which you can deduce absolute Christian science and Christian science. So I wrote that book after 15 years of pondering that subject, wrote the book on the science of oneness, showing how each chapter shows another aspect of oneness, another law of oneness, annihilating another aspect of dualism, and in addition to that, then I try to show that that is not standing alone, just as in the textbook it does not stand alone, but that it translates itself in every chapter to a lower level, and showed the translation of divine science to a lower level, either according to the chapter to the level of absolute Christian science, or to the level of Christian science, or even to the level of evil and handling evil. So if you read that book that way, you will see that suddenly that book has a completely different meaning than perhaps it had before. And in this way, really, we could see now something about the oneness of being, something that had to do with the level of divine science. Yes?